Welcome to Get Sleepy, the podcast where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. My name's Thomas, and I'm your host. Thanks so much for tuning in. The way this podcast works is very simple. Just pick an episode, press play, and get comfortable in bed. We'll take a moment to relax, and then I, or one of my friends, we'll read you a bedtime story designed to gently grasp your attention and guide you to sleep. Remember, the more you tune in, the more effective the podcast will be at putting you to sleep. So wherever you get your podcasts, be sure to follow or subscribe and listen in every night so you never miss a good night's rest. And we truly love hearing from our listeners and finding out more about how Get Sleepy has changed the way you sleep or any thoughts you have about the podcast. So when you wake up tomorrow, why not follow us on Facebook, Instagram or Twitter, where you can connect both with us and with fellow listeners. The links to our social channels are in the episode notes. And of course, we're dedicated to helping you get a good night's rest. Quality sleep is something that everybody deserves, and that's why we want to keep the podcast free for everyone. With that being said, I want to give a big thanks to one of our sponsors, Best Fiends, for helping to make that happen. Best Fiends is an entertaining, casual game to play in the daytime, especially right now when a lot of us have more spare time on our hands than usual. It's a light-hearted way to pass the time. With a unique and fun quest of character collections and puzzles, the creators update the game every month with new levels and events, so it never gets old. As I said before, I've actually been playing Best Fiends myself, and it is a great way to take some time out and challenge yourself in a really fun, easy-to-use game. So engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. Now, in tonight's story, you'll be hearing the soothing voice of Simon as we go on another adventure into the past through the Library of Time. We'll be setting sail on a legendary Chinese treasure voyage. Firstly, make sure you're comfortable and settled, ready for your own voyage to the land of sleep and sweet dreams. Take a deep breath in, hold, and release. And one more time, breathe in and out. In your own time, find a comfortable, natural rhythm of breath. Feel the air drawing in through your nose, travelling down into your body and your lungs, and then flowing back out. Each breath is giving your body all that it needs to relax. As you slow your breathing down, your muscles, your heart and your mind will all follow. And as you listen to our story in a more relaxed, slow and soothing state of consciousness, you can peacefully drift off to sleep. We begin at the entrance to the Library of Time, a long-forgotten stone building filled with old books and wisdom. On a night like this, it's the perfect place to find a dreamy adventure from the past. The world seems to be asleep as you approach the library's grand entrance.
Imagine a set of immense double doors. The dark mahogany is carved with scenes of human exploration and discovery. As you run your fingers over the finely polished wood, you get the sense that you're touching something very ancient. You push gently, and the door swings open with a soft creak. You step through the door into the foyer of an astonishing library. A crystal chandelier hangs from the vaulted ceiling, twinkling with a million specks of light. Two spiral staircases wind up to the second, third, and fourth floors. Green and white marble tiles seem to stretch out forever in front of you. Endless rows of bookshelves hold the knowledge and stories of an entire species. A sign stands at the entrance of the main hall. You can't quite make out the words, so you step closer. In gold curved lettering, it reads, "Welcome to the Library of Time." Only the most curious souls can find this place. Each and every book here connects to a different time and place. While in the past, you will neither be seen nor heard. You cannot change the past, after all. You can only learn from it. And learn you shall. You take a deep breath and step forward into the library. The comforting scent of paper, ink, and knowledge fills your nose as you walk past shelf after shelf. Your feet striding across the marble echoes through the otherwise silent building. The shelves are taller than you, but every book is within reach. There are cozy aisles between each shelf with white marble pillars standing in the intervals. At the end of each row are sitting areas with upholstered chairs and sofas, some with rugs and coffee tables. A glint of gold catches your eye. You stop and reach for the book. The cover is plush red leather, inlaid with gold writing. You run your fingers over the recessed golden grooves of the title. It reads 1406. With the book in hand, you walk to the end of the aisle and find a comfy-looking chair. The fabric is sunshine yellow and as soft as fresh spring grass. You take a seat. With the book in your lap, you lay your head back as your body sinks into the cozy chair. You open the book and begin reading. Zheng He was born with the name Ma He in Yunnan, China, in September of 1371. At the age of 11, Ma He was brought to the capital to serve in the palace as an aide to the prince, and his name was changed to Zheng He. As they grew up, Zheng He and the prince would become best friends. Eventually, the prince became the emperor of China during the Ming dynasty. The new emperor appointed Zheng He as the commander of the navy. You close your eyes and take a deep breath, imagining this past world. As you take another breath, the smell of salt water fills your senses. You feel a cascade of refreshing ocean spray on your face. When you open your eyes, you find yourself in another land. The Indian Ocean stretches out before you. A warm, seasonal wind blows at your back, ruffling your hair. You stand aboard a massive 15th century Chinese flat-bottom ship called a junk. This is no ordinary ship. It is longer and wider than an American football field. You look up in wonder at the ship's towering masts. There are 9 in total. Each is nearly 200 feet tall. Giant square sails with bamboo supports pull the ship along with the seasonal winds. You gaze out at the sea. Hundreds of ships fill the ocean, each painted with eyes like a dragon's. Countless red sails float against a background of blue sky. This is Zheng He's fabled treasure fleet. Ships of all shapes and sizes stretch out as far as you can see in every direction. They are painted crimson red with whitewashed bottoms. Some have carvings of eagles, bulls, dragons, or phoenixes. There are 317 of them altogether. Each type of ship has a special use and a different color flag. A black flag with a white character flies above every ship, showing which squadron it is in. You see a few ships nearly as large as the one you're on. They're almost 340 feet long with 8 masts. These are called horse ships because they carry horses as well as wood, nails, tools, and other materials needed for repairs during the long voyage. The familiar cry of a gull reaches your ears. Land must be nearby. You walk to the side of the ship and look east. The thin outline of India dances a tightrope between land and sea. You take another breath of salt air. The clean, humid breeze leaves you feeling refreshed. You look around at another type of ship. These are over 250 feet long. They are supply ships with holds filled to the brim with food for the crew. These ships are vital for feeding the treasure fleet's 27,000 crewmen. Another type of ship slips into view. It is a 220-foot troop transport carrying soldiers. Close behind is another ship, a water tanker. it is specially designed to carry enough fresh water to last a month at sea. A bell rings out from above you, sending a signal to the nearby ships. An answer chimes back. You listen as the signal echoes further and further into the distance, as each ship passes the message on to the next. The fleet slowly begins to turn east, away from the afternoon sun. Two more types of ships sail around the perimeter of the fleet. One is a 165-foot medium-sized warship with 5 masts. The other is a patrol boat, 120 feet, smaller than the others, and powered by 8 enormous oars. These are the guardians of the fleet, vigilant as hawks, constantly scanning the seas for signs of pirates. Their sleek design and small size allow for faster and more dynamic maneuvering. The sound of waves lapping against the hull mingles with the creak of ropes. The complexity and organization of the fleet are marvelous. There is one more type of ship you see. It's the mammoth treasure ship that you are aboard. Dozens of sailors are hard at work adjusting sails and preparing for landfall. They are unhurried but diligent, working with great efficiency and focus. There are over 130 crewmen aboard. No one seems to notice you watching or walking about. The words from the sign in the library replay through your mind. While in the past, you will neither be seen nor heard. You begin walking toward the stern or back of the ship. Here, 3 decks of cabins rise up like a hotel. As you begin walking up the stairs to the topmost deck, you hear the sound of drums. Ship after ship begins to thrum out the same slow, rhythmic beat. Those on land will soon hear the fleet coming as red sails fill the sky like a crimson sunset. You climb the last couple of steps and turn to look down the length of the ship. With its wide decks and skyscraping masts, the treasure ship is truly a marvel of engineering. You walk to the back railing of the ship and look down at the wake, carving a gentle wave through the open ocean. 2 huge iron anchors hang below you. They are larger than you, with 4 prongs that angle upwards. Soon, these anchors will be lowered to hold the ship offshore. As you turn to go back down the stairs, you hear the soft cooing of a pigeon. A sailor is attaching a small note to its leg. He opens his hand and lifts the bird up. The pigeon flaps up into the blue sky, carrying a message to a distant ship. You descend the stairs on the opposite side of the ship. On the next deck, a long walkway and balcony stretch across the width of the ship. Rows of red pillars support the deck above. Intricately carved railings of lacquered wood run the length of the deck. To your right are narrow hallways leading to rows of cabins. You turn down the first hall. Lanterns light the hallway on either side. Square wooden beams line the hallway and crisscross the ceiling. You stop at one door covered in painted carvings of animals and bamboo forests. You pull the door open and enter. The cabin is lavish. Rich, colourful silks hang from the ceiling. The finest lacquerware furniture adorns the room. Circular windows looking out over the sea line one wall. This is no normal room. This cabin is fit for a king. Soon, these rooms and hallways will be filled with officials and envoys from many different nations, each looking to build ties with China. You leave the courtly decks behind and head down into the heart of the ship. Below deck, you find many rooms, compartments, and hallways. Lanterns flicker along the walls, lighting your way. A corridor stretches down the length of the hull. Shafts of sunlight pour in through 12 portholes. 12 cannons cast in bronze sit in a row, each in line with a porthole. Another corridor, just like this one, lays on the other side of the ship with 12 identical cannons. With the many warships and patrol boats protecting the fleet, it is unlikely that these cannons will ever be needed. But the valuables on this ship cannot be overprotected. The warm smell of simmering onions leads you down one hall to the galley. Inside, cooks are chopping vegetables, cutting meat, and boiling rice to feed the hundreds of sailors on board. Besides the crewmen, there are doctors, ironsmiths, woodworkers, caulkers, government officials, teachers, and interpreters. This fleet is effectively a city on the ocean. The smells are so delicious that you can't resist. You take 2 stuffed rice balls and wrap them up in a small cloth. Curiously, 2 more rice balls appear on the plate in place of the ones you took. You remember the words on the sign in the Library of Time. You cannot change the past, after all. You continue on, passing the crew's quarters. These rooms are much more modest than the grand cabins above deck, but the crew is well cared for. When they return from their 2-year voyage, they will have a great reward of money and fine cloth awaiting them. Below your feet lies the hold. It is sectioned off into watertight compartments. The design of the hold is based on the design of bamboo, with its hollow, sealed sections. This ingenious design keeps the ship afloat in case one or two sections take on water. Beneath the hold is the bilge. The ship has many large stones layering its bottom. These stones are the ship's ballast. They keep the ship weighed down so that it will be more stable against the rocking ocean. The treasure ship's greatest secret lies in the hold. You open a hatch and take a lantern from the wall. You climb down into the compartment and hold the lantern up before you. There, in the warm glow of the lantern, you see rolls of silk stacked in rows. There must be thousands of them, all dyed in extravagant colours. Some are deep blue, like the winter sky. Some green, like dragon scales. Beside the bolts of silk, you find several lacquerware trunks. You set the lantern on a hook and kneel to open one trunk. Inside are beautifully crafted ceremonial silk robes, each with a motif of a dragon or phoenix. You take the lantern down and continue walking through the enormous compartment. It stretches nearly 200 feet across the width of the ship. The mission of the treasure ship is clear. They've come to trade. You come to several wooden crates. They have a comforting scent of hay. You again hang your lantern and take a look inside. Inside the first crate are thousands of white porcelain dishes, cushioned by layers of straw. You take out a plate and turn it over in your hand. It has incredible hardness and a finish as smooth as glass. You set the dish back in its cradle and look into another crate. This crate has small porcelain bowls. Some are slightly blue, while others are tinted green. You hold one up in the lantern light. Its sides are so delicate and thin that you can see the lantern's flame dancing through it. It is truly a work of art. You put the porcelain back in its place and take a seat on a lacquerware stool. From your pocket, you remove the cloth with the two rice balls. You take a bite. The warmth of the rice fills you with comfort. In the center is a symphony of finely cooked meat, vegetables, and spices. You finish off the snack in a few more delectable bites, feeling completely satisfied. With the lantern in hand, you continue to explore the hold. Another crate holds beautiful stoneware. The pottery is covered in decorative patterns or scenes of nature. A fine, clear glaze covers the artwork, ensuring that it will never fade. A final crate is filled with porcelain vases and urns with a pale jade green celadon glaze. There are large jars of fine wine, sacks of hemp, boxes of candles, salt, tea, oil, needles, pots, and of course, gold and fine art. This is truly a treasure ship. The fleet will soon be docked in the harbour of Calicut in southern India. No doubt, Calicut's merchants will be ready to trade their turmeric, ginger, cardamom, cinnamon, and prized pepper for these Chinese goods. You make your way up from the hold and back onto the main deck. You take a deep breath of fresh, briny air to clear your senses. A heartbeat of drums continues rumbling across the ocean. You see a man wearing a fine red silk robe standing at the railing. He is about 35 years old. His skin is tough, his figure stout, and his forehead is wide. His eyes sparkle like the sea. This is none other than Zheng He himself. You walk closer to stand next to Zheng He. He stares forward, quietly contemplating the days to come, you join him in looking across the sea at the growing sight of land. This is only the first of seven magnificent voyages of trade and exploration that he will make as commander of the Navy. Between the years of 1405 and 1433, these ships will visit Vietnam, Java, Sumatra, Sri Lanka, India, Bengal, Thailand, the Philippines, the Maldives, and Borneo. They will travel as far as Arabia and Africa, where families in the heart of Zimbabwe will eat their meals on dishes of fine Chinese porcelain. They will trade silk for spices, porcelain for precious stones, and lacquerware for exotic lumber. You think about all that lies in store for Zheng He. You admire his courage to adventure into largely unknown worlds. His life will shape the course of history. You take one last look at the man and close your eyes. You take a deep breath. There is a ringing of bells, a rhythm of drums, the lapping of waves, the cry of gulls. They slowly fade out into silence. You breathe out and open your eyes. You are back in the sunshine yellow chair in the Library of Time. The red and gold book lays closed in your lap. You look down the corridor at the endless shelves of books and wonder where you will go next. But for now, you rest your head on the back of the chair and drift comfortably off to sleep.